Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 239, recorded February 16th, 2015. I almost said 14. Had a little...
I could hear that.
Brain pause there.
Well, here we are. Who's next? Or who's up this week, sorry?
We have... I don't know who's next.
I don't know either, who's up?
We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and Tony in New York, and JR in Eastern Kentucky.
Cool. All right.
So, should we start?
Let's hit it.
Or do you have anything else that we need to talk about first?
No, I think we're good for now.
Okay. So, Matt has an audio file for us, like a voice message. So...
Yeah, in fact, he has got two of them.
Oh. So it's our lucky day.
Yeah. So, we're going to listen to the first one and talk about it, and then listen to the second one and talk about that.
Sounds good.
Hey Aquarimax, this is Matt from Perth, Western Australia. Thought I'd send in an audio file instead of my usual email. So, first of all, I was at the fish shop the other day and I saw a small black box that you could put in the tank that's called a CO2 unit. And what it does is it has a carbon cartridge and it manages to turn that carbon into CO2 just using about 7 watts of electricity. And so the unit itself costs $100. The carbon cartridges cost about $30. You have to put a new cartridge in every 2 to 3 months. And yeah, it sounds like a really good option compared to having lots of containers that I have to set up for producing yeast and that kind of thing to produce the CO2, or, you know, really expensive units. It's going to cost many hundreds of dollars. I've forgotten the exact unit name, but I'll send the name in my next email or audio file so you guys can do a bit of research in it if there's anything on it on the internet. The other thing is I lost one of my discs about 2 months ago, which is sad, but the problem with that is now, before when I had 4 of them, they're all kind of schooling together, and the one that's just blue, but dark blue, the solid blue color, he's staying dark, and he can turn like in this electric bright blue that's really nice, but he's not done that for a while, and he's spending a lot of time hiding in the log or kind of like right at the surface of the tank, not like near the surface, like almost kind of on a funny angle to be near the surface of the tank. And I know that's because they're hiding basically, or attempting to hide, and I don't want him to do that. So I bought another 4 discus, some small discus. Really shows you how much your fish have grown when you get some new ones. And that seems to be helping, but the blue guy still isn't at his kind of full color. And even some of the new discus are kind of hanging out at the top of the tank occasionally. I'm pretty sure this is a hiding behavior. I don't think this is a bad chemicals at the bottom of the tank kind of situation, because they all go and eat, which is great. So none of them are sickly. They're just not looking as good as they could. So I was wondering if you have any advice to... you know, encourage them all to school together and get the blue one to kind of go back to his bright electric blue color that he had before. Yeah. So any advice you had on that would be great. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Thank you, Matt, for sending us that in. That sounds really cool. The CO2 thing. I'm all for less containers and yeasty stuff.
Yeah. Fewer containers is nice. And, you know, the theory sounds like it can make some sense. But, you know, I did some preliminary research because I had heard about these before. And I guess I hadn't mentioned them probably because I hadn't tried them yet. And I still haven't. But I just did a little bit of research, and not a lot. So I can't say a whole lot about it. But some people reported disappointing results. So I would say...
Disappointing in what way?
Disappointing in that it didn't produce enough CO2 to make it worth it.
Well, did you figure out how it works?
Yeah. Yeah, basically the electrical current that goes through the block of carbon, it's electrolysis. The oxygen, it may pull from the water by breaking up water molecules. I don't know if it pulls it from, you know, dissolved oxygen in there or what's going on. But at any rate, the electrolysis is what liberates the carbon dioxide from the carbon itself.
And lets it go into the water.
Yes. Okay. And there's probably some fairly complex things going on there, but yeah, it releases it directly in the water from the block. But some people said things like it's not very efficient, or it does release some CO2, but not enough, or it says it's supposed to be able to last for X number of, you know, months, but it doesn't, it lasts about half that for me. And I was much happier when I set up a different system, you know, things. But that, you know, I didn't look around in too many different places, but I tried to get a little bit of an idea. And
it might be interesting. No, Matt, if you do try it, let us know how it works for you, because I think it sounds intriguing.
Yeah, and I would recommend, one of the places I looked at was the plantedtank.net and looked up carbon block CO2 kit, something like that. And it showed up there, and that gave a little bit of an idea. Because it sounds like the consensus was, yeah, it did put some CO2 in the water, but it wasn't as much as I wanted or needed in my particular system, and it's better for smaller tanks and so on. So it might not be a perfect match for your discus situation, but it's worth doing a little bit more research into.
Okay.
Now, as far as your discus being up at the side and being dark, especially your blue one, this is very familiar to me. Reminds me of something my cichlids in the past have done, and it's typically when they are stressed, not chemically, like you mentioned, you didn't think it was a chemical issue. It was a social issue. They were being bothered by other fish, like more dominant fish. So they would go up into the corner where they felt like they would be, and in a funny angle like you mentioned too, they'd go up into the corner and try to stay out of the way. And that was usually a danger sign that they were beating the tar out of each other.
So is this maybe, since he said he lost one, so he had fewer numbers, so there's less of them to disperse the bullying? Is it like maybe it's getting more picked on now?
Partly. There could be a lot of things going on. He said he had four and then lost one, so then he had three, and the one was the one that was going dark and so on. I'm wondering if he's experiencing aggression. This third discus, the blue one, is receiving aggression from the other two, if they're starting to pair off.
Oh, well, now he said he got four more.
Right.
Younger ones, smaller ones.
Yeah, and that's just one possibility. It could be that the...
Was it still hiding? I'm trying to remember in the message now. Was it still hiding after he got the four, or was it just not coloring up really well?
I believe it was doing both.
Okay.
And it could be that he's getting some aggression and that the little ones aren't eliciting as much aggression from the adults because they don't seem to be a threat yet. That's one possibility. So let us know, first of all, if you're noticing any sort of aggressive behavior from the others, because that's when I've seen it, it's always been because of aggression from more dominant fish in the tank. And it's usually a sign that I need to remove that fish or make some other change that changes the social dynamics. Which, as you did by adding the four, that seems like a good thing to do, but it doesn't seem like it's eliminated the problem. So maybe, you know, just
might tell help us. As they get older, but I don't know how long that will take.
Yeah, yeah. Let us know how that, if you've noticed any sort of aggression against that bluefish from the other two, and if they show any signs of being, of pairing off or being buddies or anything like that. And then maybe we can explore further.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's.
Should we do his other message?
Yeah, let's go straight to his other one.
Okay. So we can pull it up here.
Here it goes.
G'day, Aquarimax. This is Matt from Perth, Western Australia. So the CO2 system is called SICE, S-I-C-C-E. It works by electrolysis and apparently doesn't cause any giant pH spikes or all the other kind of issues you can have with the CO2 system. So it looks pretty cool. It doesn't cost much. So I'm definitely going to get that soon. I still haven't got it yet because I spent quite a lot on trying to help this sickly-looking discus do well. I isolated him. I had to get a new LED light, which looks great, and a new air pump. Really quiet air pump is amazing by Eheim. But unfortunately, he passed away, so don't have him anymore. I'm considering what to do with the 2-foot tank, though, since I've spent a bit of money on it now. And I'm thinking of putting a couple of marine clownfish in there, a bit of live rock. And when I went to the store to talk about that, they said that you don't need a filter you can just use a protein skimmer on such a small tank. It's about 17 gallons, 54 liters, and it will only have like two fish and some live rock. That's it. I really want to make sure the bio load is low so that I don't have to worry about little spikes causing chaos in there. But I was going to ask you guys, do you have any advice on that? Do I need both a filter and a protein skimmer on such a small tank, or do I just need a protein skimmer, a heater, and a light? And of course, a power head to move around the water. Yeah, so any tips that you have on that, that would be great. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, well, we're sorry to hear about your discus. You know, that we're listening to these live, we hadn't heard them before, so sorry to hear about that. I guess some of our advice from earlier won't be particularly applicable now. But, you know, we took a second to look up when you said the name. Kelly looked that up really quickly. And looking it up on Amazon, which I know is not the end-all of everything, but that CO2 system has 1.9 out of 5 stars. It's only 7 ratings at this point. But, it doesn't sound too good. Most of the ratings are in the 1 range. One person said they had a good... good result with the CO2, but only one person said that.
I'm just wondering if it depends on the size of the tank. If it's just really made for a smaller tank.
I'm sure that does play a part in it, yeah. But anyway, something to think about. Now, in terms of the small marine tank that you're thinking of set up with live rock and the couple of clownfish, we had a single clownfish in a 10-gallon with... peppermint shrimp and some soft corals and a couple of dwarf hermit crabs and things like that for quite a while. And I think we eventually had a bicolor blenny in there too. We didn't do a protein skimmer because you don't necessarily need one with a small tank as long as you're going to do regular water changes. And that's what we relied on, and we had good results with that because you can change such a large proportion of the water for fairly inexpensively. You know, you can do that with a smaller tank. That it's possible to do. And so we had a filter without a protein skimmer, but you could go the other way, like you say. If you have a power head and a protein skimmer and you've got live rock and everything in there for biological filtration, you could get away without a filter as long as you keep the bio load light, as you mentioned. And you will have to do periodic water changes in salt water. You know, it's not done as much as in fresh water typically, but you could still do, you know, a couple of gallons a couple of times a month, even up to once a week, and it wouldn't hurt anything and could be helpful. But I don't think you'd need necessarily to have a filter as long as you kept the bio load light in that particular setup that you talked about. If any other aquariumaxers who are heavier into the marine area than I am and would like to comment on that, please do. But we found that, you know, even though protein skimmers are very useful in a larger marine tank and are also useful in a smaller one, that we could get by without one just by doing water changes. So I imagine you could probably do the same with a filter with such a light bio load and with a protein skimmer removing a lot of the issues from the water. So.
Okay. There we go. Hopefully that works. So thanks for calling in, Matt. It's nice to hear from you again. Time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Should we go to Tony?
Let's do so.
Okay, Tony in New York. He says, "Work on the fish room continues. I am looking forward to creating more videos for everyone, including the much-awaited aquatic yoga video. Yay!" We still need to work on our interpretive dance on our end.
Oh, definitely. We haven't gotten very far on that yet.
Yeah. I expect I will be able to move to set up the room's first tank before the month is out.
Cool. Coming on right along, then.
He says, Mick, I wanted to say thank you for all your fish room advice. I enjoy learning from the best. The ballcock method you described is exactly what I was after. Great minds think alike. I love your idea of placing water storage in the loft for a gravity feed. I wish I had a space on the level above the basement for a similar water storage solution. I like the small bin solution I've come up with, see my video, but I have to admit it is a compromise. The only other idea for a gravity feed I could think of was to build a very tall stand that would mount a water storage bin close to the fish room ceiling. But heaven help me if it ever toppled over. I would have to work hard to make that a safe setup. Yeah, because Tony has little people in the house, yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose the other non-electricity solution would be thinking on your method of delivering water with water pressure. This would be great for any tank that doesn't need aged water. I would imagine that smaller water changes would be required in order to avoid trouble from nitrogen bubbles in water that hasn't been aged. And, of course, water conditioner would have to be added.
Yep, good point.
Russ, I'm so interested in your new Opiola setup. First, I would love to hear more about the filtration. You suggested that it is light filtration. I know the common method of filtration for tanks like this might be a sponge filter. I've been curious about sponge filters in the past, since I like the idea of sucking debris up, but not sucking up the shrimp. But when I used to run a hang-on-the-back filter with my shrimp, with the filter bag over the intake, all the debris would just fall back into the water column as soon as I would power it off for a water change. So I've always wondered if a sponge filter could really keep particulate matter out of the tank effectively. Please reveal to us your fishy secrets.
Okay, well, Opiola setups. Right now I have two, one at home and one in my office, and I'm setting up two more. Okay, I'm setting up two more of them, and so I want to, I guess I need to explain that. First of all, that Opiola are very different from most other shrimp. They are so, in terms of husbandry and a lot of other aspects, they're completely different. So this wouldn't necessarily be applicable to other species of shrimp. So what I'm about to tell you will be Opiola specific. Right. Okay, so that's out of the way, and now we can talk a little bit about filtration. Honestly, on the tanks I have now, I don't have any filtration at all. And it doesn't seem that I need it. I haven't had filtration on Opiola tanks for a long time now, years. They don't really need it. They're very different from other shrimp. That way, not that you can't have other shrimp without filtration, but it's a little more tricky to do so. And I've got, I would say, probably over 100 shrimp in a 3-gallon tank with no filtration. And then my other tank is a 2-gallon tank, and it's got probably 60 to 80 shrimp, no filtration, and they do fine. But I'll tell you what I have in the two tanks I'm setting up for them are going to be larger tanks, a 10-gallon and a 5.5, which I may have mentioned before. At any rate, one of them, the 5.5-gallon, has a very small, I think it's called an Azu Palm filter on it, which is a hang-on-the-back filter, but very, very small indeed. And I've cut the flow rate down the lowest that it will go. And then I've got a sponge on the intake, an open cell foam sponge from an AquaClear. It's made for an AquaClear filter, but it's a fresh new one. It's never been used before. Anyway, I just cut down into it with a small blade on a pocket knife, or maybe I used scissors, I've done both, so that there is about down into the sponge itself, right in down towards the center, about an inch and a half or so. And then I just kind of fit that over the end of the intake tube, which is quite small in that model of filter. So the water flows through the open cell foam and into the filter box and so on and back out. I've noticed when I do it that way, there's less debris than when I use a filter bag, which I've done in the past too. Not to say it's completely without debris, maybe when you turn off the filter to do maintenance and so on, but there's less of it. And I'm also, I've got to explain this about Opiola, they really have they contribute very little. Each individual shrimp contributes very little to the bioload. And the system that you set up with Opaiola, you really strive to keep nutrient levels quite low. You feed very, very sparingly. And the shrimp seem to be, they seem to do very well that way. So I might only feed them once a week or even once every other week. And if I go on vacation for a month, I never worry about feeding them. The tanks get enough light that they grow some algae, which the shrimp eat. And I typically feed a very, very small amount of spirulina, dried spirulina powder, or a small piece of like a pelleted food. I'll take a piece of pelleted food intended for goldfish or cichlids or something, crush it up and give them maybe half of that. And that's enough food for 2 weeks. And the shrimp thrive and breed with this because they're constantly picking at the biofilm on the sides of the container, on the lava rocks in their container, and so on, eating algae, bacteria, and so on. And that's kind of similar to their natural diet where they live in the anchialine ponds. They just kind of, or pools, they just eat the their algal mats and bacterial mats. There they eat that. They will eat fallen insects and things that end up in the water as well. And so really, there are very few nutrients. A filter is not necessary, but I decided on this one I was going to put a filter on the 5.5. Currently, I don't have a filter on the 10-gallon, and I am debating whether or not I'm going to put one on. I have used sponge filters for shrimp to make this, you know, connect to, you know, other shrimp species. I have used those. They work well. Shrimp of just about any species seems to like picking at the foam of the sponge itself. And in terms of getting particulate matter out of the water, I think, you know, they don't do as well at that as other filters, but as long as you don't have organisms that are going to be kicking up debris, then the water itself usually stays quite clear. I've noticed some combinations you don't want are things like Corydoras catfish and a fine substrate that they're going to be kicking things up when they swim around and push through it. If you have like a fine sand and then you have a Corydoras catfish or coolie loaches or something like that that will be kicking that up, then it's not a good mix with a sponge filter because there will always be particulate matter in the water, even if the water is relatively clean and you're doing frequent partial water changes, as you should be anyway, for most setups. That doesn't work. But if you have gravel in there and you don't have something that's going to be digging in it a lot, then the sponge filters seem to work fine as long as you're doing the frequent partial water changes. And again, with Opaiola, I don't do frequent water changes. They're not necessary, which seems really strange and counterintuitive, but I don't do them frequently. I do them occasionally, but if I do one every 3 months, that's kind of a lot for Opaiola, just because they're such a totally different animal. I would never recommend doing that with most shrimp. But, you know, Opaiola are different, so there you go. Now, let's continue. Now, Kelly had to step out for a little while, so it looks like I'm going to have to finish the podcast myself. So let's go to Tony's next question. He says, the other question I wanted to ask was about your two-tier tank setup. How do you water change the lower tank? I think the usual method of a siphon and bucket would not start unless the bucket is lower than the tank. Maybe it is in your case, or maybe you use a python or an electric pump or something else, perhaps. Here's to science, Tony from New York. Okay, great question. I have several tanks on the two-tier system. And for one of them, the one that I can see right now in the other corner of the room there, is right next to the ground. The bottom of the tank is probably 2 to 2.5 inches off the ground. For that one, I use a python, and the python is hooked up downstairs. Our building here, we're on 3 stories, and my python's a 50-foot python, and the way it works out, the stairwells and everything, the stairs just go straight down from our bedroom all the way down to the basement with, you know, you can get off in the middle level and, or you can go all the way down to the basement, just follow the stairs down. And so I can actually hook up the python downstairs in the basement and then bring it all the way upstairs and it will reach my aquarium in the bedroom. So there's no problem with siphoning there, especially since it's a python. So the Venturi helps with that. In the middle level, I've got a 10-gallon Daphnia and Amphipod tank. And that one's a little trickier. What I've done is installed a Daphnia tap, which I do need to make a video about that. I said I would if it worked, and it does work, so I need to go ahead and do that. But the Daphnia tap is a very simple apparatus, but essentially it's PVC with a valve on it that I just open and close, and there's always water in it, and it's got a perpetual siphon going on in there, so as soon as I open the valve, water pours out. So I have a gallon jug with the top cut off. You know, I've enlarged the hole essentially at the top, and I just stick that under there, turn it on, and water flows out into the jug, which I then can dispose of the water, and then add water with the same jug in the top of the aquarium. So I don't do water changes with any kind of other tubing besides that, my Daphnia tap, which works fine and allows me to collect Daphnia as well. So I will attempt to make a video soon on that, so everybody, because I know people have mentioned they're interested in seeing how that works. All right, so then the other two-tiered tank setup I have is at my office, where the 5.5 is under the 10-gallon. Now, this one's a little bit tricky because it is also close to the ground. It's probably 4 to 6 inches off the ground. Since I don't have it here for reference, I'm guessing. So there's not a lot of wiggle room there. What I use to change it is just a normal gravel washer, a small-sized one, but a normal gravel washer. And I generally use a turkey baster because it's not a self-priming one. The one I have in my office is not self-priming. The tank would probably work fine. I mean, the water changes would probably work fine the way I do it if I were to use a self-priming small water changer, like one that's intended for small tanks. You know, that you can buy the ones that are like 2 to 8 gallons or 2 to 5 gallons or something like that. And all you have to do is just shake the gravel washing portion within the water column, and it will start pulling the water up through the tubing and then into your water collecting container. But anyway, I typically set my gravel washer sideways in the water column so that it's full of water. And then I put the jug, the gallon jug, on its side. And then I use the turkey baster to start a siphon. I catch that with my thumb and then stick it into the jug, let it go. And when the water starts flowing, then I just turn the jug, I put it upright again, and it's catching the water. And since it's a 5.5 gallon tank, I rarely do more than a 1 or 2 gallon water change. I guess I often do 2, but then you can just pass the tube, you know, you pull it slowly out so you can cap it with your thumb and then stick it into the next jug and let it go. So that's how I do water changes in there. It's not the most elegant solution, and I've been thinking of getting one of the self-priming water gravel washers for my office to be able to do that with. I think that would be easier because I often use those. I just don't have one in my office. But anyway, that's how I do it, and it works fine. It's not great, like I said, but it works just fine. So I probably would have a harder time using a bucket unless I did the same thing with a small bucket, setting it on its side, getting the water flowing, and then putting the bucket upright again. But it works fairly well with a jug. So, thank you, Tony, and hopefully that answers your question. And if you have any others, please let me know. All right, now I'm going to move on to JR in Eastern Kentucky. He says, "Hello, Aquarimax. This is an update on my citric acid and baking soda CO2 unit. Yesterday, I recharged the bottles with fresh citric acid and baking soda. I have had the unit in operation now for 2 weeks and running it at 2 bubbles per second for 24/7. I have only been able to go 7 days before it's empty and CO2 production stops. To stay with this unit, I feel I need to see 2 weeks on a charge, which was how long I would go with yeast. With the 2-week goal in mind, I started using a ball valve I installed so that I could turn off the CO2 when the lights are out. When I turned off the valve yesterday, the pressure gauge was reading just in the green at 1 pound. I was wondering what would happen overnight and if I would awake to burst bottles. This morning, all was fine and the pressure gauge was still at 1. It would seem that the reports I had read were indeed correct. and if you close the valve, the two bottles obtain even pressure, so the process stops and does not move citric acid from bottle A to the baking soda in bottle B. When I opened the valve this morning, I expected a rush of CO2, but that was not the case either. After a few moments, the bubble count climbed back to where it had been yesterday, 2 bubbles per second. So far, I am very pleased with the performance of this unit, the pressure gauge, and the needle valve. I have been asked if I think it's worth trying this method of producing CO2. If I can get 2 weeks or more between recharge, then it is absolutely worth it. Much more control over yeast, cheaper than a pressure system. While spending some quality time on eBay, I came across a solenoid valve for $14, which included shipping. It's rated for continuous service, so I figured, why not? Should be here Tuesday, and if it works, I will put that in place of the ball valve. Next week, I will let you know how it's going. Thanks, JR in Eastern Kentucky. Well, that sounds pretty encouraging. Glad to hear that it's working fairly well. It remains to be seen if it will last, you know, the 2 weeks that you're hoping for, but it sounds like otherwise, system's easy to use and very stable in terms of quantity of CO2 that you're producing. So, encouraging news, and hopefully that works out for you, and we'll look forward to hearing updates from you. Let's see. Anything else that I needed to say? I am in the process of releasing some more YouTube videos, so if you haven't if you haven't subscribed yet to the YouTube channel, it's just called Aquarimax, then I would love it if you would. I'm just releasing a video that I filmed yesterday. One of my morning gecko eggs hatched, and I was there for essentially the entire process. I went over to peek at it because I knew the egg was going to hatch soon, and about half a second after I peeked at it, the head emerged. In other words, it appeared that the egg actually began the hatching process 1/2 of a second after I arrived at the vivarium. And as the head popped out, I reached down in my pocket to start filming, and the little creature's head turned around back into the egg and its tail stuck out. And from that point on, I took a video of the entire process of hatching. So that was fun. And it ended up taking a long time, so instead of, you know, releasing the 17 or 18 minutes of footage I had, I just cut it down to it's about 1.5 minutes and took out resting periods. You know, when the gecko was active and moving around, that's when I was filming it. And so it ended up being about 1.5 minutes. But it's fun to see. If you've never seen the hatching process of a gecko before, it's definitely worth a look. So hopefully you can enjoy that. And I'm going to try to put that video up of the Daphne on tap and several other videos in the next little while. So in next week, we'll be releasing our interview with Mick in the one and only Carnforth, UK. We have already recorded it, and we're going to schedule that for release at the normal time on Wednesday next week. So it was a great interview, a lot of fun to talk to Mick again, and he had some great insights. So please remember to listen to that one and to share it, and so other people can benefit from Mick's insights as well. And it was just a lot of fun. So please check that out as well, and then we'll be back to recording new episodes for episode 241 early in March. So we'll have, but it, from your standpoint, it won't be any different because you'll be getting a new episode every week. You won't be interrupted at all. It's just for us that we're having a bit of a break because we did 2 this week. But anyway, I digress. May the fish be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.